This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak with Michael Cunningham about his latest book, Unsayable, A Life in Writing. Maybe we all know this feeling. You reach for the right words only to discover that what matters most, a memory, a loss, a moment of love or joy, always seems just beyond language. Yet that's also the reason we keep reading and writing, to come as close as we can to expressing what feels impossible to say. Michael Cunningham has long been a writer who explores the mysteries that language can approach but never fully capture. His novels, including The Hours, which won the Pulitzer Prize, A Home at the End of the World, and Specimen Days, are filled with characters searching for meaning, connection, and the words to express lives that often resist easy explanation. Cunningham's latest book, Unsayable, A Life in Writing, turns that search inward. Part memoir, part meditation, and part craft book, it asks a deceptively simple question. Why do we write when the most important experiences in our lives seem impossible to put into words? This book is not a manual on how to write a novel or a collection of easy advice for aspiring authors. Instead, it's a thoughtful exploration of why we write at all. Cunningham suggests that literature doesn't eliminate uncertainty. It teaches us to live with it. The page becomes a place where questions can remain open, where contradictions can coexist, and where language, even when imperfect, can bring us closer to one another. Rather than offering a set of rules or formulas, Cunningham reflects on the uncertainties of writing itself. He considers memory, imagination, revision, failure, beauty, and the strange, persistent hope that a sentence can bring us closer to something we can never fully possess. Throughout the book, he argues that literature doesn't exist to solve life's mysteries. Instead, it gives shape to ambiguity and invites us to dwell within it. For readers, Unsayable is an invitation behind the curtain of one of America's most celebrated novelists. For writers, it's an honest account of a lifelong practice built not on certainty, but on curiosity, patience, and the willingness to keep searching for language that almost, but never quite, reaches the truth. I spoke to Michael Cunningham about his latest book, Unsayable, A Life in Writing. So let me ask you about Unsayable, A Life in Writing. The title Unsayable, I mean, it seems almost like a little bit of a dare. You set out to write this book about something you believe you can't fully put into words. Seems like a little bit of a contradiction. It's so compelling this way.
Well, yeah, you want your, of course, want a title to be compelling and, you know, ideally appropriate. And one of the things, one of the main sort of themes of the book is the power of language, which is considerable, and also the limits of language. The fact that language is concrete, it's essentially 10 billion words or 10 billion Lego blocks. And as hard as we try, as much as great writers have managed to put the ineffable into words, I think there remains some sort of understanding between human beings, between a writer and a reader, of that which we both know, but for which there isn't exactly language. It's a feeling, it's some sort of, how to put this, undercurrent of shared humanness. And I think even the greatest novels are very sophisticated blueprints for readers to fill in the nuances of feeling and emotion and premonition and all those human things that ever so slightly transcend even our vast vocabulary.
It's such a puzzle. It's sort of like the book, a story, a poem can say the unsayable. So it stands in for the things that we feel we know, but can't, we don't have the words for it. What's so interesting about this as a life in writing
It feels like such a deeply personal book, like a memoir of your mind, of your writer's mind.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. It is sort of a memoir of my writer's mind. And of course, my tawdry and mostly despicable life. But debated with my editor about it. And we decided to call it A Life in Writing instead of a memoir, because it's a kind of memoir, but it's not a traditional memoir. Yes, it's me writing about my own life, but it's also me writing about other writers, about writing itself. So yeah, memoir felt not quite right. And so it is called A Life in Writing.
You are putting a lot about your life out there, your life, but and also your life as a writer. And did you ever worry about putting all of these things out there, even things about your writing process? Like, do you worry that it could somehow diminish the mystique of it, of Michael Cunningham?
sure, all the time. Not so much. Oh, I don't know if I exactly have a mystique. And I certainly, writing about the writing process, didn't feel like I was divulging any kind of secrets. You can know everything there is to know about the writing process and still not quite nail it. I did pause over some of the personal things. I included some things from my aforementioned Toby past that I wasn't that crazy about telling people about. Frankly, if my parents are still alive, I don't think I would have been. But, finally, I decided if I'm going to write about my life in ways that I hope will sort of link up with readers' lives, even if our lives have been pretty different, don't hold back. Don't leave things out. And so, to the best of my ability, I didn't leave things out.
I was thinking about also how it occurred to me that there was something about the reasons we write, that the title Unsayable is saying something about how we're always sort of grasping for something that we know we can't fully capture in words, and yet there we go. Yeah. And what is the relationship between this, like the things that we struggle to say, and the reason we write and we keep trying to say these things?
Yeah, to me, the degree to which there's so much we can say, there's so much a painter can paint, it's almost infinite. But I think part of what drives us to write, and I suppose to read, is the sense that we are constantly, as writers and then as readers, they're coming up against the unsayable, the known unknowable. And to me, the whole history of art of any kind is sort of a story of heroic attempts at an enterprise that is not doomed, but never quite okay. Monet, who did the incredible, huge paintings of water lilies, lived into his 80s and died at his easel trying to get the motion of reeds under water in ways he didn't quite think he had gotten yet. And to me, that's a good way to go out. I think that's part of the deal for most writers, painters, whoever creates anything. Part of the sort of thrill of it is, I don't know what to say, well, tilting against windmills, you know, the idea that, let's just say, if you could write, if anyone could write a novel that said every single thing there is to know about life on Earth, it would be very long. And that would be, but that would also be sort of the end of novels. There we are. Here's the book of everything. Better now concentrate on your macrame, you know, onto something else.
Well, you mentioned the things we can't know, the unsayable and the unknowable. Has writing made you somehow trust that not knowing? It sounds like it, because that means you can keep on writing.
Yeah. I think I would say it has, on one hand, helped me accept the unsayable and the unknowable, but it hasn't prevented me from doing my very best to say it and know it. And because delusion is one of our more powerful human qualities, for better and for worse. I'll finish a book and think, on to the next one. That one will really say everything. I don't see how you could be a novelist without being at least a little bit delusional.
Yeah, I like this idea. You're making me think about this. This is going to sound kooky, but this occurred to me when I was reading the book. It made me wonder whether you were writing two books. The visible one made of words, and then this other one that you're sort of gesturing towards. I don't know. Does that sound kooky to you?
Oh, that sounds great. I frankly wish I had thought of that. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's true not only of one book, but of a lot of novels and other books. There's the book on the surface, which is made of words and sentences and variously specific images. But then there's what I'll call the underbook that sort of animates the book that's made up of people and events and weather and geography. That is part of the sort of mystery and magic of a really good book. It has a visible layer and it has an invisible layer. One more painter, Rothko, those incredibly moving, beautiful abstract paintings, mostly two or possibly three sort of rectangles of color against another color, and they are powerful in ways that's a little hard to fully understand. Three variously orange and red rectangles on a field of red. What's that about? And Rothko said to the end of his life, what people don't understand is, as I paint them, I'm in a stage of violent rage. And I find that really fascinating. I don't know if I can articulate it, but I think it carries over into writing and other creative acts as well. There is the surface, and it is mysteriously animated by something going on with the painter or the writer that somehow bleeds into the work without being exactly identifiable.
Wow, that example really makes me understand this idea more deeply, I think.
Right.
Well, Elizabeth Strout says, she said it to me once in an interview, and I've heard her say it to others, that novelists are always writing the same story, or they're always sort of circling around the same question. And, she's sort of, we'll talk about Olive Kitteridge or something related to that particular book, even though she had written books before Olive Kitteridge.
Yeah.
What does that idea do for you? Do you think about, are you sort of always circling around the same thing you're trying to discover or answer or present to the world?
I'm glad to see the question posed to me personally. With all due respect for girl genius Elizabeth Strout, I'm a little leery of any statement that starts with all novelists.
Yeah,
I just don't think there's any such thing. But this novelist versus that novelist, I would say that I circle around certain, maybe just something as prosaic as subjects, certain human phenomena that just seem to interest me sort of endlessly. Yeah. From unorthodox families to this yearning for some sort of promised land that's out there, that so many of my characters are trying to find. But I think I'm aware of those things, having written X number of novels. I didn't sit down to write my first novel and say, this is going to be about an unorthodox family yearning for some for some kind of earthly paradise. It's more, for me, like something that emerges over time when you see yourself bringing what you hope are significant variations. You don't want to write the same book over and over again, of course. But yeah. If anything, I guess I would be a little suspicious of any writer whose one novel in no way resembled the next novel. I guess I would wonder, well, but really, what's really meaningful to you? What really care about? Because we're all writing our own little piece of a story everybody's writing that's too big for anybody to write. And I would call it a certain connectedness, a certain sense that the world is far, far too big for anyone to write about. And so you kind of go along with your own idiosyncrasies and write variously about the aspects of the world that feel most compelling and connected to you.
I think I have some insight about this a little bit from something you said about how writing a novel is like a projectile shot into the future. The future can feel so wobbly and so uncertain, especially, I don't know, since the pandemic. I mean, always. But just all of these things that we're immersed in, or the stage of life that we're in, or when things feel so especially hopeless and dire, and that's a challenging thing. Those particular subjects that you mentioned, the mysteries of them, the silence that they're wrapped around in, because we're, you know, there's sort of things that are sort of untapped for us. I'm not quite sure what I'm asking you, but that idea of the challenge of writing a novel is, as you say, this thing shot into the future, and you just have to trust it, as arduous as it is, as laborious as it is, as difficult as it can be. There's a level of trust there too, and a kind of faith.
Yes, yeah. These are terrifying times. I don't, of course, know what the future holds any more than anybody does, but I do think that writing a novel, okay, every novelist, no matter how dark and pessimistic the book might be, it is by definition an assertion of hope, if only because by doing it, you imply that you have some reason to hope that there will be a future, and the people in that future will still read books. I don't think anyone, however gifted they might be, who is in total despair, writes a novel. Why would you? So you could say that you walk into a library or a bookstore and see all those books, and whatever they contain, you probably tell yourself, this many people went to great efforts to write these books in the hope that there will be a future. I'm in my own little temple of hopefulness, and I love that about books.
Oh, that's such a beautiful idea. Yes. Are you familiar with the work of Charles E. May? He wrote quite a lot about short stories. And he wrote that the deepest truths in literature can't be paraphrased, that stories exist because some experiences just resist language. Sounds like the unsayable. And he wrote about this idea about how it's almost like exactly what you've just said to me, that fiction succeeds because of this. It helps us live with the fact and accept the fact that some things can never be fully said, but it's in the trying, you know, and so there will always be stories, that there will always be novels, thank goodness. And so something that you said put me in the mind of May, and then I I had scribbled in my notes something that William Frank said, the philosopher. He said that something like language can reach a depth when we can just accept that it can't fully express what we want to say. And reading your book, I was struck by how closely that idea seemed to resonate with what you're saying, exactly this about fiction. It just made me connect with this idea that because of silence, of the idea of silence in your work, in your books, mm-hmm. it's not the opposite of language. It's not like not language. Silence something else. You're so conscious of it, and the things that you seem to deliberately just not say, those that unsayable, which to me feels like a different, almost brand of the unsayable.
I would say it's a sister brand.
Let's say sister.
yeah, because yes, silence is probably every bit as important as speech, but silence wouldn't be silence if it wasn't interrupted by sound, and vice versa. Freud said, if we were happy all the time, we wouldn't understand it as happiness because it would be our ongoing natural state. So you could probably say that a book is made of words and also silences, even as minute as my own favorite punctuation mark, the semicolon. Which is sort of, it's sort of like a three-quarter stop in music. It is saying, and I don't think anyone registers this consciously, but it's saying there will be brief silence between this phrase and the next phrase. A period implies a greater silence, but that's very concrete. There's also, how to put this, the sense that all that language summons a certain potent silence. What do you think I mean by that? That a short story, a poem, a novel is more than the sum of its parts. Take Moby Dick. It is made up of incredible sentences, one after another, for like 10,000 pages. And yet, all those words add up to a bigger impression than all those words put together can quite convey. Moby Dick has a sound, and you could say a smell and a color. And if you strip it all the way down to its essence without its language and its attendant implications and silences, you get... There's a sea captain, a whale boat officer, like he's really mad. He can't get over it. You know what I mean? The story itself is almost always, if you aim the fire hose at it, almost nothing. It's all about the life conjured in the name of the story, which happens in all kinds of ways.
The life conjured in the name of the story.
Yeah.
Wow. Michael, where's Natalie? Have you heard from Natalie?
Oh, Natalie, no. I have no idea. Natalie, not her real name, but...
Sure.
No. I did use real names of people who I still know. That was a long time ago. And maybe wherever she is all these years later, she will read it and recognize herself. But anyway, no. We only spoke that one time and then it stopped going lives.
Perhaps that's the way it should be. It should stay.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people should come and stay and some people should come and go.
Yeah. Tell me this, finally, when readers finish this book, what do you hope that they'll question, not about you, but about themselves? Because I find this book so It is about you, and it is about many things. But as you know, it's also about the reader. And I wonder if you consider that at all.
Well, absolutely, yeah, very much. I believe that a novel, something memoirish like this, is not in any way intended to teach readers a lesson. I don't have lessons for readers. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know anything that other people, that everybody else doesn't know. But I do hope is that a book like mine will do what my favorite books do, which is provide a certain sense of companionship, a certain sense that you have felt things like this too, or you can imagine feeling things like this, and you're not alone. I think reading a book is a little bit like an intimate relationship with another person. Love, a deep friendship. You teach each other about what it's like to be human, what it's like to be this human and that human. But there's not exactly a point or a moral to it. You know what I mean? That you're not, the teaching that goes on is mutual and not about a lesson per se. It's about the opportunity in a book and a close relationship to be yourself and at the same time enter the self as another human being. In the case of books, sometimes one of you is alive and the other is dead, but it still happens.
That's so profound. Michael Cunningham, thank you so much for talking to me. What an honor, what a thrill to get to talk to you.
It was great talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Michael Cunningham is the author of Unsayable, A Life in Writing. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.